up and get ahead with WKGN. 1-3-4-0.
Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios in Knoxville, it's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. Here are your hosts, John Reed and Bob Baskerville.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Happy Monday to you, April 15th, tax day. Hopefully, you already got everything taken care of. You don't have to stress today. You can just enjoy your Monday. Get your week started off on the right foot. Jam-packed weekend. A lot of sports. Excited to talk about it. Bob, top of the morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Earlier start than usual for me. I've already been out to the airport. Back. I think I mentioned Friday, my son was in town for a long weekend. Got in Thursday night, but he's heading back home. It was a good visit, though. Great weekend. Weather was great. From a Tennessee sports perspective, we've got stuff to talk about today, but it was a really good weekend all told. How about you?
Solid weekend. Nothing to complain about. Was stimulated plenty of times with plenty of sports. Always had something to watch, which is nice. Soaking it in these weekends because you're starting to run out of them a little bit. You're getting ready to get out of the sports calendar and into real life and then summer stuff. So I'm soaking them in while I can. Sam, top of the morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing well. Yeah, had a good weekend myself. Spent a lot of it outside enjoying that weather. Just kind of went to my buddy's house. They've got a nice little porch. We ran an extension cord out there, stuck a TV out there, and just watched the Masters most of the weekend. So can't complain on my end.
Did the Masters live up to what you wanted it to be?
Yeah. I thought it was a pretty good tournament. I think maybe the back nine yesterday was a little more disappointing than I wanted compared to what it was looking like it was going to shape up to be. But I think I had an amazing time in the first 3 days. I like seeing the course when it's playing tough.
Yeah, I had to fill in a pickleball league yesterday with some friends, or with a friend and his friends. And as we're walking in, like, it was right when, I think it was on 8 maybe, when Scheffler, or maybe 9, Scheffler and Morikawa, it was a par 5, so that's 8, right?
Yeah.
They, you know, were in line to birdie, and, you know, both kind of get to 7, and Scheffler was on 3, on his third shot was a little bit off the green down the hill, and Morikawa was like 8 feet away, and I had money on Morikawa and Oberg, so I was like, okay, yeah, I'm in decent shape right now, and he's like, yeah, you're in really good shape. You got two of the three. I was like, yeah. I was like, but the other one's Scheffler. I was like, the other one's the best player in the world. Yeah. So I was like, I don't feel great about this. And then I kind of had it paused on YouTube TV. I was like, I'll pull it up after the first game. We're sitting there and pulled it up, fast forward a little bit, and then boom, Collins in the straw. Boom, Collins in the bunker. Boom, Collins still in the bunker. Boom, Collins misses his bogey putt. So he double bogeys. Like, yep, it's over. That's it right there. And it was, and Scheffler took off. So, yeah, the back nine – was just kind of a coronation.
Yeah, we went from like a 4-man playoff there to like 15 minutes later just being a 4-shot Scheffler lead.
Yeah, yeah, he's a beast. And look, I don't really like him. I don't dislike him. I did discover that's why I'm not as much into golf. It's like there are no real storylines or villains. Like everyone, that's part of the reason I didn't want to go to the Masters. I discovered it's like I don't want to sit there and clap for everybody. I like booing people. I like good. I like bad. Good, evil. I can convince myself, like, hey, we're the good guys, we're the bad guys. You can't do that in golf, and I think that's a part of the reason that I don't gravitate towards the sport because I get tired of seeing the same people clap just for every good shot. You know, when they're hanging out the hole, oh, he's Scotty birdied, okay, and then I'm going to go crazy when the next guy does it too. Like, I need people to root for, I think, and golf's never been able to gravitate, pull me in, you know, that perspective because there's no booing other people. You got to be classy. You got to be gentleman. I understand. I get it. But wasn't rooting for Scheffler, was rooting against him, but I do appreciate greatness, and I do appreciate when people live up to the hype. And everyone said it was his master to lose, and he came out and proved that. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I had so my bets that I had placed on Thursday and Friday just went down the tubes quickly. So I did grab a pretty good one on, I felt, on Morikawa to win. And I was feeling like just what John was saying. I was like, ah, we're in it. We're in it. And then that ninth hole, man, that was more than a turning point. That was like a torpedo to Morikawa that ended it.
It's one that you hope doesn't, like, derail him a bit because, like, you know, Francesco Molinari has never been the same since gagging away the Masters in 2019. Like, for a while, he was, like, a top five player in the world, I feel like. He was always kind of up there, maybe not in the world rankings, but just always in the majors, was kind of up there hanging around and had the lead in 19, hits into the water, blows up, Tiger comes back and wins. And, like, Molinari hasn't done anything since then. Like, I don't think he's been in any top tens really since then. So I don't think it'll happen to Morikawa, but he's my favorite golfer. And you worry about how that is going to affect him. And he just said after the thing, like, hey, I got a little too greedy. Started feeling myself. But I was hitting all the shots, tried to get greedy, and it cost me. And, you know, hopefully it's something you can snap and clear from. But, yeah, like, I put maybe five or six bets to win on Thursday and had three guys in the top six, top seven, you know, on Saturday and Sunday. Once Cam Smith made his run, I had him and Oberg and Morikawa. So I was like, okay, got a good chance. The problem was Scheffler. Scheffler was at the top. And like I said, he felt inevitable. And I didn't even come out of it that salty just because it was cool just to see a machine. On Saturday, it looked like he was going to fall apart a little bit. He had the double bogey and kind of dropped back, and then he eagled, I believe it was eight, got back on track, gave the triple fist pump, kind of showed some emotion last night after winning. That's been a critique of him, is just people say he's just boring and doesn't seem like he cares. Doesn't show emotion, but he showed some this weekend.
Scotty, I think it was after that round where he was, you know, he made that double, and they're talking about, someone just brought up about how he just bounced back all the time. He's made, this season so far, he's made bogey or worse 49 times, and he's gone on to birdie the next hole 47% of the time.
Yeah, they kept talking about that yesterday, and it seemed like that was what happened. And that's a sign of greatness, and like I said, I wasn't rooting for him, was rooting hard against him, but he kind of beat it out of you, and you just have to tip your hat and respect him. And it feels like unquestioned now whether or not people would have said this before he won it, but it's Scottie Scheffler's tour, and he's the face of the sport. I know he was already the best golfer in the world, but to win that second Masters, it's his sport now. I was kind of holding on thinking, John Rahm's just as good. John Rahm could go against him head-to-head. No. It's Scheffler's sport. Who's number two?
Probably still Rahm.
Still Rahm?
But,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a big gap, though.
Yeah, and you only get to see him play three times a year now, pretty much, in the big ones, you know.
Rahm or Homa?
Homa was all on the green every, like, you know, I watched a lot on Saturday and Sunday. I was checking in on Thursday and Friday, but I watched a lot Saturday and Sunday, and Homa was just on the damn green every time, but just couldn't ever make a birdie putt.
Yeah, he was rock solid all week.
Just his putts were just missing constantly.
He wasn't missing by much either. No. Just couldn't get any breaks. His bounce on 12, too, was just brutal send him into the weeds there.
So what, he finished third?
Third, yeah.
Four under? Mm-hmm. So he kind of came back, too. Him and Morikawa both, and, you know, kind of fell apart. Both made $1 million, though, so can't be too mad at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, great Masters. Got nothing else to really add about it. That's always the problem, is there's no storylines. It's just like, hey, here's the winner. Here's what they did.
Did you see on Friday, I forget whose ball it was, because, again, the wind was swirling. Somebody had their ball on the green, and
Gary Woodland.
Yeah, it just started blowing off. Yeah. I mean, this was already, you know, the ball had sat there for a few minutes. How did they rule that? Did they let him reset
I didn't see,
it?
Actually. Yeah. I would guess that he gets to reset that. I'm not sure on that rule. But, yeah, the wind was crazy. I mean, it was like 35 miles an hour on Friday. You could see Tiger finishing, like, when they were on 18 and, like, the sand was, like, hitting them in the back from the bunker.
If your Tiger was in a successful weekend, you broke the record. You know, you made the 24th cut. I don't know if that record will be broken.
No.
It does feel like one of those. It's just like, hey, like, it's going to be hard for a golfer to match that or break that. I don't know how much we actually care about it. It feels a little bit like Caitlin Clark passing Pete Maravich. Like, it's noteworthy, but, like, yeah, it's not something we really talked about leaning into it, at least me, very casual. But then, yeah, on weekend, he just looked like he wanted to pack it up and go home but couldn't. And just, you know, 10 over on Saturday, his worst in a major. And Sunday wasn't much better. Do you think he felt like a winner this weekend, or like a? Do you think he would rather have just not played at all?
I think it was his, you know, his competitiveness that got him kind of screwed up there in the weekend, to be honest with you. I think he just saw himself on Friday afternoon and realized that he was only like technically 8 down in the tournament. He was like, oh, I still kind of have a chance. I'm going to go out there and play. I think if it was like he made the cut and it was like 15 shots back, I think he probably would have withdrew. But I think it was just that what if in his mind where he's like, oh, if I can go a couple under and the course plays hard, like I might have a chance. But then, you know, he blows up. But I think he is proud of the making the cuts record and then just getting 72 holes under his belt walking.
Yeah. But he's pretty sore today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just felt like it was the main prerogative, I think, was – and he got that, was to make that cut. But, boy, the reality afterwards, it makes you wonder. As competitive as he is, you know, some school of thought would be he's going to just keep fighting to try to get back. It's not going to happen. And so you just wonder how many more times we're going to see him, because you got to believe that's just so incredibly frustrating for him.
I wish he'd just swallow his pride and, like, ask to play in a cart. Because I think he could do pretty solid if he played in a cart.
And he could get an exception for that, or exemption for that, or exception.
The PGA Championship allows John Daly to do it,
yeah.
So I don't know.
What's his ailment? Just being fat?
Probably.
Yeah, he's like, I smoke a lot of cigarettes, and I'm pretty heavy.
Had too many Hooters wings last night.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed it, even if I was so close. I told you I had those two winners they lost. And then the other bet I made on Saturday morning that I felt good about was I had Patrick Reed top 10 at like plus 250. And he bogeyed 17 or bogeyed 18 to finish one shot off of that. So that was fun as he finished one over and tied for 12th. So that hurt too. I was like, oh, come on, Patrick. Bogeyed 18. So close but no cigar for me all weekend in my golf, but I still enjoyed it. Any final thoughts on the 24 Masters?
Did you see the whole deal that went on with so Tiger was playing with the highest ranking amateur yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and they were walking, and there's this whole story where Tiger apparently was spotted giving him writing something down and giving him a note on the eighth hole or after the eighth hole, and so they, you know, in the press conference afterwards, they asked this kid what was that note, and the kid was like, I never got anything. Just basically, it was like that never happened. And so I was talking to my wife about it, because my theory on that might be, based on what you read, it sounds like Tiger's been pretty good in terms of giving back to some of the younger golfers. And it could have been something like he was just giving the guy his number, saying, hey, man, you ever want to play around, or if you need some advice, but do not give this number out. I just wonder. It was just very weird, because it was very visible from everything I heard. And this kid was like, I don't know what you're talking about. It was like something out of a movie.
If you need a good masseuse, here's who you call. She'll take real good care of you.
For some reason, and I've never seen Joshy Boy, so I can't really. This guy kind of reminded me of like maybe like a Joshy Boy. I don't know. I guess I've never met him, so I can't say that for sure.
Interesting that you're sitting there thinking about our callers.
I know. It was It was weird, but okay. Interesting too.
Yeah. Sounds like a good time to go to break. We'll talk to Tennessee sports coming up out of the break. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Good morning. A little bit of volume coming off that ramp already from Western Avenue on to 640 going westbound. It's picked up even more in the last 10, 15 minutes.
All right, Bob, what's the bigger story here locally? Tennessee baseball breaking out the brooms or the orange and white game?
Oh, I think it's I think it was a great weekend in general for Tennessee sports, which I would love to spend a little time talking about today. But for me, the bigger story was the baseball team sweeping LSU, because the way I see it, I also recognize that LSU is towards the bottom of the conference right now, but it's this is one of those, they're the defending World Series, College World Series champion. You throw out the record, they also ended Tennessee's season last year. This thing mattered on a lot of levels, and the Vols took care of business too. It was an impressive weekend.
Yeah, it's a little bittersweet when I see the record of Tony Vitello, just how he dominates LSU. I think 10-4 has the last 14. Knowing that like the two that are on the loss column are the two biggest ones. I got an LSU friend, went to the game on Friday and talking trash, and he knows they suck, and we know that we're, you know, kind of consistently been a better program than LSU since Tony took over, but they got the national championship and they beat you to get there. So you can't go full-fledged trash talk with him. He's got that trump card. But it was still nice to go and finally get a sweep. Finally get a sweep. Tennessee has been needing a sweep all year. Finally got one, and it was against a team, like if you had laid out the schedule before the season and looked and said, which ones do you want to sweep? Rank them in order of ones you want the most. LSU at home probably comes in at what, number two? Is that fair to say, Sam?
Yeah.
Like Vanderbilt's number one. You want to sweep them just to kind of continue owning them. It drives them crazy. So like it's really funny that you do own them. But then like LSU at home probably would have been number two. And so far on the schedule, the teams you've played, LSU would be that team you want to sweep of all your opponents you've had so far. So it's nice that Tennessee, I don't want to say peaking at the right time or playing their best ball, but played a really solid weekend series and checked off some boxes that I've needed to see them check off. Finally won some close games. Finally won some games where your offense didn't just come out and score 15 runs. I'd been personally kind of waiting to see that. I think we talk about it every time we come out. It's like, yeah, either we run rule or we, you know, we lose. It's kind of how it felt like it had gone for Tennessee so far this year. And it was nice to see them grind out some wins and show, hey, no, wait, our pitching is kind of rounding into shape a little bit. We're still not full strength, but our pitching is showing they're kind of figuring some things out, because Frank Anderson always figures things out. And Tony Vitello, you know, I was talking with a friend on Saturday who was, you know, kind of complaining about some of the bullpen stuff and like, oh man, why hasn't this guy, why haven't we been using him all year? He's pitching great. And I'm like, well, it does kind of seem to be what Tony does. Sometimes it takes him a little bit to figure things out, but I feel like every year by the end of the year, he has figured his team out. Kind of like what Calipari claims he does, you know, or claims what he did at Kentucky, where he's like, hey, you know, we're built for the tournament. Just let us figure things out. Let us get to the end of the season. And sometimes Kentucky figured it out. Most of the times they didn't. I feel like Vitello deserves that same benefit of the doubt. He actually does figure it out by the end of the year. And I do feel like the rotation and the bullpen, he's kind of got mapped out now.
So Friday night, Kirby got the save. Did you get down to the field level? Hey, Kirby.
I was there, but I didn't bother him. We just gave each other a little bit of a head nod. He came in and, you know, I won't say pitched great, but he got out of a jam in the eighth. And then in the ninth, got touched up a little bit, but got out of it without blowing the win and the 1.5 run line cover. So yeah, Kirby was the fireman coming out, and he got it done. And then, you know, on Saturday, Tennessee had to battle, a first round pick basically, right? Because Holman's been really good for them, despite LSU stinking. Holman, the Alabama transfer, has been really good. He chose LSU over Tennessee. I don't know if he regrets that decision, but you know, he shut down Tennessee's offense for a lot of that game. But Tennessee was able to break through in the sixth, add a run in the eighth, and get a 3-1 win. And win one of those games that I was talking about where things don't necessarily go well, but you keep grinding and you find a way to win. Beam pitched out of trouble. Tennessee had no hits until the fifth or sixth inning? Was it the sixth inning he didn't have a hit? And was able to win 3-1. And then yesterday, that one was even back and forth a little bit too, and they broke through. Christian Moore was a beast. He won that game for you.
I felt like Saturday and Sunday's games, like Saturday, to your point, John, was the first time I felt like I saw it this season where it was a kind of a exercise in grit. You know, they really did have to fight through and facing a tough pitcher, but they still had enough in the tank to win. Beam was solid. And then on Sunday, we got to see what happens late, like when you have offense that is pretty elite and clutch. I mean, because that game was tied up in the latter part of the game, but then Tennessee just put it away with the long ball. And how about Amick? Welcome back. My God. Wasn't it? He hit it first pitch, right?
First pitch and his first at bat returning. Yeah, drilled one to left field.
It's a stud.
Yeah, I guess he's healthy.
Yeah.
I guess he's healthy. So, like, yeah, he was awesome. Or at least that moment was awesome. I don't really know what he did the entire weekend series. Was he really good this series? Christian Moore, I know, and Blake Burke. Really, your 1-6 hitters were nails. Your 1-5, especially. The back of the lineup struggled a bit, as the back of the lineup is one to do. But, yeah, I don't know. Did Amick have, like, a solid weekend outside of that first bomb?
Yeah, I mean, he played pretty solid, I would say. Okay. I wouldn't say it was, like, back to what he was doing, star potential stuff. But yeah, I mean, obviously the home run starting off is huge. I would say that Christian Moore was kind of more the
weekend. Moore, Burke, and Dreiling are just awesome. Has Blake Burke
Tears in there too?
Yeah,
it's just a tough four.
I didn't feel like Tears was very good this weekend, and when I was watching, but yeah, he's been a beast this year. I don't want to forget him, but I thought this weekend in particular, Burke, Moore, and Dreiling were just nails. Whenever you needed big hits, they came up. Burke feels like he's playing his way into the first or second round of the draft. You know, I'm not going to act like an expert on the baseball draft and how that works, but like with his power, now that the average is more consistent and he's showing that you can't just throw him breaking balls and get him out now, like it feels like the glove is pretty solid. I thought he made some good defensive plays this weekend. Is he got a chance? Is he rising that high? Is that too steep to say right now?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not probably as, you know, I don't know as much about all of that stuff. So I wouldn't say that he is exactly like first rounder material yet. But you know, I think he does get drafted pretty high. I would probably, you know, be a little bit more safe on the Billy Amick train of him getting into the first round kind of more than a guy like Blake Burke.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I just...
But yeah, I mean, like...
When I watch him, it just... The power obviously jumps off. Smacking more doubles. Seems like he's figured things out at the plate. And then, yeah, I thought the defense was pretty impressive this weekend. So, maybe not. I just...
This is an article that I'm reading right now from, like, I guess more towards the start of the season, and it had him in, like, the third to fifth round range a little bit.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think he's been pretty good this year, though, and would maybe rise up a little bit. So I don't know. But that's just something I was watching on Friday. I was like, maybe. I debated with myself in my head, and I figured I'll ask Sam, see what he thinks. Got the sweep, though. A record that LSU probably didn't want to break the first time they had lost five SEC series in a row since 77.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're struggling a little bit without that pitching coach now down at Georgia.
Is that it? Is it that simple?
I mean, their bullpen is definitely not as strong this year, but, I mean, you know, and then you
bullpen kind of sucked last year, too, though, until they had to be good, then they were good.
Yeah, and then, you know, you compound it with losing some guys to the major leagues and stuff like that. Yeah, you're obviously going to take a little bit of a step back, but even for a program like LSU, it's been a little surprising this year.
Yeah, my path has been to put down Jay Johnson and talk about, hey, you know, he won with was it Minaldi or however the hell you say that guy's name, the old man. Won with his players, got lucky with the transfer. Mineria. Yeah, I was like, outside of that, what's his name?
Mineria,
there, yeah. Won with his players and got lucky on a transfer. I was like, otherwise he sucks. So I was like, compare him maybe to Kentucky basketball. Like, yeah, if you win one championship and suck the other 6 years, like, I guess you feel good. Like, Tony Bennett, Virginia, and, you know, that's what I've been trying to go with to try to get him to bend the knee a little bit to Tennessee.
I'm just looking at this batting order, man. And they kept it consistent all the way through the series, too. You go one through four, but it goes on. You know, you got Moore, Burke, Amick, Tears, and then Dreiling, Curley. I mean, and if the pitching can show up like it did this weekend, that's pretty tough combination right now. Feels like they're feeling themselves.
Do we think Snead has, you know, firmly taken over kind of the closer role, the high leverage guy? He came in on Saturday and, you know, shut the door with two innings and three strikeouts and
blew LSU a kiss as he came off the mound.
No, he seems like the high leverage guy that is their go-to. You know, I think they're comfortable in kind of throwing him in any spot if he, you know, if you kind of do those opener roles and you can only get like three innings out of your opener, I think they're comfortable throwing him in there and trying to get four or five innings, and then, you know, he's good with going into the, you know, the eighth and ninth inning and just kind of shutting a game down. So yeah, I think they've definitely kind of solidified Snead as that jack of all trades a little bit in the bullpen.
You know, you kind of had a couple guys do that this weekend, right? Like AJ Causey didn't get the start on Friday, but he pitched 4 2/3. He was the second guy out, and he was pretty good.
Yeah, he looked a lot better.
Was a little worried about him because, you know, he came in and his very first inning got into, you know, was in a little bit of trouble, and Tommy White got the single through the middle and the bases were loaded. You're like, oh, man, is he going to get out of it? But he got out of it, and after that kind of settled down. And then yesterday you had who was it yesterday?
I think Banky, I believe, came in yesterday, yeah.
Just got one out, right?
Well, no, Combs is who I was thinking of. Because, like, Combs came in and got the one inning, and they were talking about, well, you know, if Tennessee hadn't scored those two in the eighth, you might have gone back to Snead, but they're going to let Combs go back out there since he had a clean inning in his first inning. And you got the win, kind of played you a favor, gave you two extra runs going into the ninth to kind of really, like, demoralize LSU. I would have been nervous going in only up two, but their outfielders had a big blunder. Wynn knocks the ball down. It falls down like a little league double there and gave you some room, and Combs is able to come back out and pitch that ninth.
The wind was tricky this weekend in the park.
It looked like it. It wasn't very – I don't feel like it was huge, like very windy on Friday.
Yeah, not as much Friday, but definitely Saturday, Sunday. I feel like it was affecting it more.
Yeah, I feel like we were at the Masters. But Tennessee able to get a big sweep. That felt good, able to move into second place in the SEC East, if you care about that, and big weekend series as they head to number one.
Yeah, the Batcats.
Yeah, they're good, man. I don't know if they're, like, legitimately great or anything. Like, I don't know if they're 13-1 good, but on Saturday I saw they were down, was it 7-0 in the game two? And you're like, okay, here we go. And then, nope, they just came out and scored a bunch of runs late in the game and still won that one kind of comfortably after falling down 7-0. And that felt special. But, yeah, they're 13-1 in conference. Tennessee 10-5. So can go to Lexington this weekend and get back in the race. And just in the SEC in general, you got – You got a little bit of a solid done for you by Alabama. Maybe I have to retract some of that Alabama slander as they were able to take the Saturday and Sunday games against Arkansas. So the race for the actual conference championship now kind of, I don't want to say open, but you can get back in it if you have a good weekend this weekend.
Keep chipping away with series wins.
Keep chipping away with series wins. Bad weekend for Vandy as they were swept. Kind of dominated, too, all weekend. A&M killed them.
I want to say they got run ruled. Was it twice or just once?
I think they got – I don't know if they – I know they got run ruled on Friday. Yeah. I don't know if they got run ruled on Saturday. I know they were headed towards it, though. I want to say they did, but I might be wrong. I know if, like, the series, it was, like, 32-6 or something crazy like that. Like, they didn't show up. They didn't show up. All right, good little weekend of SEC baseball. We'll talk the orange and white game coming up. Stick with us.
Ever been the coach?
Drank White Claw Hard Seltzer this weekend. Drank White Claw Hard Seltzer on Saturday. Probably, I've learned some things. I've learned some things, Bob. It's the first year we've ever planned a golf tournament. Feel like on these golf tournaments, I maybe dropped the ball. Feel like we maybe should have done it on a Friday. Give people an excuse to get out of work. That's some feedback I've gotten from some businesses.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. I tried to talk with some experts about it. No one really gave me a heads up. So maybe if year one goes off smoothly, year two we'll do it on a Friday. And have more of a plan, and you know, maybe then the businesses can let their employees off type of thing. Because that was something I ran to, is a lot of people be like, you know, on Saturday, we can't really get out there and can't really make our workers go out there. I was like, makes sense. But we still got 5 days to get ready. April 20th, that's Saturday, the first ever Fan Run Open. I'm excited for it. I'm stressed about it. I want it to go off very smoothly. I'm going to have some White Claw there. We're going to have a good time. We're going to play some golf. You can, too. You can sign up your team at fanrunradio.com/shop. You can sign up as an individual and be placed on a team if you just don't have any friends that want to play golf with you. But you still got time. We still got a couple teams left. I'm trying to fill it up, so go. fanrunradio.com/shop. I'll have the White Claw on deck. The orange and white game on Saturday, got to be honest, the game somehow failed to meet up to the expectations I had. And the expectations I had were very, very, very low, as the excitement for it was very, very, very low, as we talked about the last, you know, month. Like, I don't really care about this. Not a lot of juice surrounding it. Don't see a lot of people counting down the days like in the past. And the game somehow even failed up to live up to that, I thought.
Yeah, I think what they did do was they created some buzz by just having Josh Dobbs there, Trey Smith there, Juwan Jennings there, doing, you know, bringing some really noteworthy VFLs in, gave Kim Caldwell a lot of love. So that helped. The football itself, and we'll talk with Ryan Shumpert in the next hour. It'll be interesting to get his take, too. It feels like kind of had to dig to find what were the good takeaways. You know, I mean, you got good athletes out there, so you're going to see some plays, but you know, Jake Merklinger, for example, you know, ran for a touchdown, but in real game scenario, I don't know if that would have happened, because, you know, they kind of don't do much hands-on when he's when your quarterback's running like that. So it's good to see he can run, but you don't really know what that would be like in a real game setting. That's just one example. But we did see some, I don't know, we saw some things. You know, I'm impressed with Mike Matthews, I will say that. I mean, just from the standpoint that he's obviously, we've seen some of a spring practice video of him making some great catches, and he had a touchdown in that game. Really nice ball from, I think it was from Gaston Moore. But he, I also at one point saw him lay out a block that was really encouraging, because, you know, if you got a receiver like that, that kind of reminded me of something like Brew McCoy would do. But, yeah, you definitely have to dig a little.
No, Matthews should be a star here at Tennessee. And I got to say, the 89 has grown on me a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm now rooting for him to keep 89. I don't think he's going to. He probably doesn't feel fast wearing number 89, but like I kind of like it. It's grown on me a little bit. Merklinger at least showed he can play a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if he is ever going to be a factor here at Tennessee just because of the depth of the quarterback position when you look at Nico and George McIntyre. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be a factor here, but he looked like he could play. Gaston Moore, to me, like, he's a big takeaway from me. It's like, he looks pretty good when he plays.
He's kind of I kind of keep thinking of him like a – it's almost like a Gardner Minshew vibe as far as just efficiency and just going out and getting stuff done, understanding the system and –
kind of feels like he could play somewhere.
Yeah.
And like, you know, not somewhere big, but like if you wanted to get out on the field, like I feel like he could be a group five starter. And then I also found myself thinking, what would our record have been last year with Gaston Moore as a quarterback? Do you think we're worse than 8-4?
Yeah.
You do?
Sam seems a little more skeptical of Gaston Moore than you and I.
I mean, I just don't think we're an 8-win football team with him at quarterback
still. Okay.
I would say like 6 or 7.
Okay. I would then ask like what games you're talking about. Like, I guess maybe Kentucky. Maybe.
Maybe A&M, but like Milton didn't play that great in A&M game either.
No, I mean
Williams won you that game.
Yeah, I was gonna say the A&M guy. I can't. Any quarterback prove that they could have won that game that day. Anybody could have gone out there and done what Milton gave you against A&M. I don't know. I just found myself thinking, like, Gaston's got a little something. He's got a little something. I wonder what he would have gone, because it feels like he'd have gone 8-4 at least last year.
He's also dicing up like our freshman.
Yeah. Point B. The point being that, hey, he looks like he threw a couple nice balls.
No, he definitely did.
I always love hearing Chaz Nimrod sighting too. I was low hearing that name.
Yeah, he made some plays. He caught that touchdown and
yeah.
He looks good.
Yeah.
And then yeah, you hear Chaz Nimrod and I'm like, oh man. It just feels like such an unfortunate name for like a big time athlete. Not to ever put anybody's name down, but like it's always my first initial take. But yeah, like outside of, you know, Nico had a good throw. Matthews, the big catch. Me just wondering about what could have been with Gaston. Like, I got no other takeaway. Sam, anything from the orange and white game or coming out of the celebration surrounding it? It did feel like it was a good Saturday day. Like, I do feel like Tennessee kind of figured out, like, hey, we'll throw some other stuff around it. Yeah, it helps whenever you have a new women's coach to introduce. And, yeah, it helps when you have SEC champions to celebrate on the basketball court and the basketball side of things, but it did feel like it was a good day, even if the game kind of sucked and felt useless.
Yeah, I mean, you put on a decent show. To me, it felt like there was just too many of your key contributors that just weren't really playing for you to know, I guess, exactly how they're going to look, and you're not exactly going to see how they look anyways in a spring game, but it did just kind of feel like you were missing a lot of the pieces that are going to be out there starting in the fall. So there's just, you know, you just got to get your takeaways from your young guys and kind of walk out of there happy and healthy, I guess.
To me, the spring game is dead. It just felt useless. It almost felt like just an audition for the transfer portal. Like, is kind of what it felt like to me. Like, hey, showcase yourself, make a couple plays, let some other teams see what you can do is almost what it felt like. Hey, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the guys who made some plays are, you know, now enter the portal. Or some guys who didn't get on the field to make any plays enter the portal. Like, that's what it felt like to me. I haven't really cared about a spring game in a while, but, like, this felt like a new low. Kind of like when we talk about with the Pro Bowl in the NFL or the All-Star game in the NBA. Like, guys just going through the motions. There wasn't much to gain from it. Now, obviously, I know it's like a practice. That's what it is. But, like, hyping it up, putting it on TV, just This feels like a waste now.
Well, as usual, it wasn't easy to find TV. It was, buried on ESPN Plus, but
where it should be, quite frankly.
No, I agree with that. The one thing I would say, and I do think this was mission accomplished by Tennessee, and that was, your points are good on the orange and white game in general, but I felt like Saturday in particular, if you think about everything that was going on between, you had the Vol walk, which was great, and you incorporated the basketball team into that, like you said, hoisted the SEC Conference Championship trophy, had the Kim Caldwell vibe going with that. Got to admit, I'm not going to be buying a Lady Vols bomber jacket, but that thing was pretty slick she was wearing. And having her out there, and just, I think maybe maybe a tip of the hat to Danny White for recognizing, man, the orange and white game may not be what it's been, but we need to make this, particularly when you have recruits watching, you have transfer portal guys for basketball in, you got to make this thing, like you used the term earlier in the show for Scotty Scheffler, like a coronation. This was like, to me, it was almost like a full-on like block party about how good the athletic department is. And you had the baseball series, too, going on.
Yeah, like I don't know if next year we'll be able to have the same type of thing, though, right? Because you're not going to be introducing a new coach, most likely, and you might not be celebrating a championship. So it was a perfect storm in that regard, because otherwise, without that juice – I don't know if the weekend feels the same, but the weather cooperated. The weather was perfect,
yep.
And you did have those things to celebrate. And yeah, Kim rocks that Lady Vol gear. The Lady Vol gear looks pretty good. She had a hoodie on too, like a dark, like charcoal with like a little blue on it. It's like hoodie I saw in an interview or something that I thought looked really, really nice. Lady Vol's got some nice gear. I have said for the last like 3 or 4 years that I wish we would just get rid of the spring game across the country and just make it a scrimmage. Like, that's when you should bring the ETSUs of the world in. That's when you should bring the Austin Peays of the world in and like have some type of understanding and agreement. Like, hey, we're not doing any cheap shots. Like, we might not even go like 100% full speed, and we'll do some situational stuff. Maybe like, it might not be your traditional game, but like, bring in a small local school. Figure something out. I'm sure the ESPN would much rather have that than your spring game. Sell some tickets for $20 under the guise of a real game and actually go through more of a dress rehearsal. Like, to me, that would be much more interesting and much more beneficial, too, and see what these guys look like in actual game scenarios. Going up against people that they don't hit every day, that you're going to feel bad hitting. And even if you don't want to make the quarterbacks all the way live, that's fine. And like, even if Tennessee was making, you know, the game live and the quarterback live, like, you could still play all the quarterbacks and get them out there. You know, if you're playing an ETSU of the world, I wouldn't want Nico out there playing more than like a couple series, kind of like just a preseason NFL game, you know, how they do with the starters there. That to me feels like it would be a lot more interesting. And you'd also be helping one of those small schools that you're always talking about. Like, this is why we have to do the bye games during the season, is we have to help these programs. We have to help them make some money. Well, do it in the spring. That's kind of what I think they should do. But do you think Ole Miss's strategy is interesting? Is that hell something, yeah, you want to see in the future? You say yes, Sam?
Anything with Joey Chestnut in it, I'm in.
They had a beautiful day themselves. They had a slam dunk contest. They had a hot dog eating contest, a little 7-on-7, which, you know, goes ahead and removes the doubt of like, hey, we're not really going to hit each other. We're going to play a Pro Bowl style here. We're going to let the receivers go out and run some routes. We're going to let the quarterbacks throw it. No one's getting hit. And, yeah, and then some tug-of-war stuff, and brought in some sororities down there, I think I saw, and just a whole bunch of things. So you liked that, Sam?
Yeah, I just like the Joey Chestnut stuff. I saw some guy got an autograph of Joey Chestnut on a hot dog bun. I thought that was a great, great sign.
Chestnut showed up. Apparently Kiffin just slid in his DMs to invite him. Yeah, it's what the story I'm reading says.
I was wondering how he got down there.
Said Kiffin slid in his DMs to invite him. He ate 20 hot dogs in 90 seconds. And then, yeah, apparently that led to a really funny press conference. So, like, the field looked weird because they only had, like, a 50-yard field.
Yeah, 50-yard field.
But I think I would have liked that more than what we did.
What about, like, NFL training camp stuff where they, you know, they invite another team to practice with them? But then it's just like a – you just do, like, a little practice and, like, a 7v7 maybe.
Well, that's kind of what I mean with the scrimmage. Like, if you want to make it more of a scripted practice, right?
I'm saying, like, Power 5 opponents, though, not, like, ETSU. Like, you go and play, like – you swap conferences and, like, the Big 12 or something.
Nah, because
like
then I think you have to worry about, like, who's coming on to whose field. You have to do it twice to, like, does Tennessee have to go to Baylor and Baylor? Well, then why would Baylor come to Tennessee? Like, why would they be willing to do that? So, like, I think it has to be a small local
school.
You
switch off, like, year and year, maybe?
Nah, see, I think you want to be at home for the reasons we talk about with the recruiting, the basketball portal guys, the football. Because it's a big football recruiting weekend, too. You want the fans to get the energy going. Like, you, if you remove the fan partying aspect of it and the fans getting on campus, like, if you remove that aspect of it, to me it becomes completely worthless. That's why you have to kind of – big boy, one of the small schools, like, hey, your kid's at Austin Peay. They've always dreamed of playing in Neyland Stadium. Hey, we'll give you X amount of tickets. You can bring your fans. And it just becomes more of a celebration in that regard. I understand what you're saying in terms of the open scrimmages that the NFL has in training camps. I just they do that around preseason games, right, where the team's already in town. I don't think you could do that in college because I don't want Tennessee having to go to Clemson to do their spring scrimmage.
I don't think ETSU really moves the needle either.
Well, no, it doesn't. It's just a different school. And, like, you actually, like, it, you know, it's just – at least you maybe get a better idea of, like, the starters. And, like, you don't have to worry about, well, my defense made great plays. Yeah, does that mean my quarterback sucks? Hey, like, my defense has a shutout in the first quarter. Was that because their offense can't score? It just removes that aspect of it. Because, like, yeah, the defense looked great in the first quarter, but that's because the offense couldn't get off the ground and get going, and that just kind of – suck to watch.
It kind of reminds me of, remember the year after COVID, they did the spring football with the FCS school?
Yeah.
So that's it's an interesting point. Back to Ole Miss, did you see Brandon Turnage's dunks?
No, I didn't. I didn't see any dunks coming out of the dunk contest.
He won the dunk contest.
Okay.
Bastard.
Did he have any memorable ones?
Yeah. He had a windmill thing that looked like, I mean – most basketball players would have been impressed.
I don't know why he had to curse his name there, Bob. He's a good dunker. What's he supposed to do? Lay it up?
No, not about that. Just
leaving. I mean, I don't think that could have been one of those where you get fired things we talk about. Like,
maybe.
I wanted new blood in the secondary badly. So, like, if a couple go to Ole Miss, if you talk about Byron Young, okay, I'll listen to that one, but. When you look and see, like, you know, Josh Heupel did a great – you know, that was my big takeaway maybe of the whole weekend was Josh Heupel. He has this spring tried to put over the defensive line every time he's gotten a chance. And on Saturday, during that very awkward interview –
that guy did a terrible job.
Yeah, I thought he did a terrible job with Dobbs too. Who is that guy?
Oh, I didn't see the whole thing. But
yeah, I don't know who that guy was either.
He immediately said Heupel was in year five.
Yeah, and, like, I thought that – he was bad with Dobbs, too. Like, I don't know who that was, and there's a reason he's on the ESPN Plus, like, spring game circuit. I know he's not one of their main stars, but I thought he was bad there. But Heupel did, you know, was asked a question about the defensive line. He's like, the guy was like, is that going to be the strength of the defense? He's like, well, not only the defense, it's going to be hopefully the strength of our whole team. And talked about, you know, just how good and deep they are. And I liked that they're putting over the defensive line. So, yeah, Byron Young enjoy – not Byron Young, Tyler Barron, and enjoy Ole Miss down there because the team doesn't really need you on the defensive line. We're good.
You know, one thing I thought about too was it felt to me this was one takeaway with the orange and white game for me was we talked about Gaston Moore. Obviously, Nico came in, was pretty efficient. We didn't just, you know, and we didn't expect to see a lot of him, but I really felt like we didn't see much of him at all. But that to say, I felt like maybe there was an emphasis. It just felt like this looked more like a 22 offense than what we saw last year, you know. And we know what the key is there. It's who's under center.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't pay enough attention to feel the magic of the offense get back. I just know the first quarter was dreadful, and I kind of checked out mentally after that.
Yeah.
And please note, I know Tyler Barron's at Ole Miss and Byron Young is with the Rams. It's just a little slip-up. His defensive lineman was gone. I haven't thought of him in a while. I know the difference. Tyler Barron's the one that turned his back on the boys. But I don't think we are going to miss him. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with some headlines over the weekend to catch up on some things you might have missed. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
A brand built.